Hey there, everybody. It is Thursday, April 11th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email with your guest suggestions and or feedback. Send it on over to Ken at thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Follow us on Twitter. You wanted us to have a Twitter account. Now we have a Twitter account, Twitter, where the number of followers has a direct relationship to your self-worth. So please follow us there, because it'll make us feel better. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What an amazing show we have for you this week. We must get started with our first guest. Lucas Silvera is the frontman and songwriter for the Toronto alt-rock band The Clicks, who are returning to the music scene after a 5-year hiatus with their highly anticipated new LP dubbed Black Tie Elevator, which drops in just a few weeks on April 23rd. The Clicks' first two major label releases, Snake House in 2006 and Dirty King in 2009, brought the band international recognition. They caught the attention of pop music icon Cyndi Lauper, the one and only Cyndi Lauper, who invited the Clicks to join her on two consecutive True Colors tours alongside Margaret Cho, Erasure, The Gossip, and our favorite, the Indigo Girls. Lucas is the first out trans male to be signed to a major record label, which drew as much publicity as controversy, which we will talk all about. He also became the first trans man voted sexiest Canadian man by chartattack.com, a title for which I'm sure he only beat me out by maybe like, what, 2 or 3 votes. But regardless, he is here now with us this week. Lucas, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Well, thank you so much.
How the heck are ya?
I'm doing well. Just getting ready and super busy to release the record, but pretty much doing okay.
Well, we have to start with you as we start with all of our musical artists. Take us back a bit. Why the medium of music? What about music speaks to you and allows you to express yourself?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I was born into a very sort of musical setting. My family has always been musical. My dad is a trumpet player and a singer, and my brother's a musician as well. And it was just always there. So people were like, how did you get into music? I don't know. I'm always like, well, music got into me first. It was almost like I didn't really have a choice. It was just always around me. And I just felt really, really nurtured in it. And it felt really natural.
Nice.
So I just kind of moved into it that way, yeah.
Now, did the family want you to go the alt-rock route?
You know, my family is very interesting. They never really asked me to do anything else. I've never had parents who were like, we'd like you to be a doctor, or we'd like you to be this or that. It was always just kind of like, well, that's what you want. I think at one point they wanted me to go to school, like, you know, college, university, but they always nurtured it in me. I have to say I've always been super lucky to have, like, supportive parents around everything. So, yeah.
I'm not saying that they wanted you to be a doctor. I'm just saying perhaps did they want you to do jazz?
No, man. My dad was really, he was into rock and roll. I grew up listening to, you know, Elvis Presley and the Beatles and that sort of thing. And even though my dad really liked, you know, he liked his Dean Martin and his Frank Sinatra, it was never anything that, I mean, I think if I was doing like hardcore metal, they wouldn't be so interested. My dad's favorite thing, you know, is a really beautiful melody. So I think that I've appeased that part of him.
There you go. Although I will say to my parents, what you do is hardcore metal, but we'll put that aside for now. Just saying. I'm just saying. And then you decided at one point, I need a group. It's not just me. I need to put a group together.
Yeah. That was sort of around the time, you know, I used to be female. As you said, I'm transgender. And I used to have this sort of, you know, acoustic singer-songwriter thing going on. And every time I hit a stage, somebody would be like, they would call me a female singer-songwriter. And I started feeling that it was such a condescending thing. And, you know, obviously having it in the back of my head that, you know, it didn't feel comfortable to me, because a lot of people have this idea that when you're transgender, you always know. Well, I knew for a while.
Right.
And then I didn't know at all. And it was at that point where I was just like not feeling comfortable with sort of being identified that way. And when that happened, and I started feeling that discomfort with the association, I decided that I sort of wanted some anonymity. And that's when I decided to start a band. along with that, my musical, you know, style was also changing. I went from playing music that was really acoustic based to more like harder rock. And I'm not sure, you know, I always say to people, I think the Clicks was actually my first, you know, trans name as opposed to Lucas.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I've done a little bit of reading on the Clicks. I have certainly listened to the music, and I enjoy it immensely. But you guys have your own kind of VH1 behind the music thing going on.
Kind of, I guess. A very different kind of behind the music, but yeah, I would say so.
There have been some. You can rival Fleetwood Mac for some, you know. I love it.
Well, not with the drugs part.
No. I don't want to put that out there. Your parents are going to call me, and that's not going to work out well. Why didn't Lucas go into jazz? There's no drugs there.
Oh yes, there is.
Yes, okay. Well, there's that. That's not the point of the story, Lucas. But I think that you guys have developed over time. You know that you're not the same band that you started out as.
Oh, no, not at all. One being that lineup-wise, I'm the only, you know, member left, and I was a founding member. And the reason is, I think, you know, it's because I happen to have been the songwriter, and mm-hmm. I started the project, and it was always sort of like my baby. And I always tell people, you know, they're always like, oh, why the other band members leave? Are you like, you know, that horrible leader who, like, you know, whips people into shape? And I'm like, no, not necessarily. What happens is that when it's your baby, you're going to want to, you know, take care of it the best you can. And when it's not somebody else's baby, the passion isn't there. And
right.
I think that's what ends up happening is they lose the passion and they lose the ability to want to make sacrifices, which you have to make over and over and over again for something that's not yours and or they feel isn't theirs. And then they leave. And it's always been my baby. So I decided this time, I was like, you know what? I think it's best I just go at it alone and just hire people.
Yeah.
And that way they don't have to put their energy into it that way and commit to it that way. And it's worked out really, really well for me.
I love it because you can see with other bands when bandmates change, they sometimes change the name of the band and they alter themselves in some way. And I love the idea that it has remained the Clicks, which implies to me that there is a core identity to the Clicks. How would you describe that identity other than, you know, because you are the constant?
I think it's, you know, it's about an ever-changing identity. I think I realized that I started the Clicks as a way to move into a part of myself that was sort of anonymous so that I could become myself, oddly, and feel comfortable with being who I was behind the name. And then I think eventually what ended up happening was it was the other way around. The Clicks became sort of my identity in like fully. And so many people, when they hear the name, they don't just hear, you know, it's a band. There's a politic behind it.
Yeah.
There's something deeper, and there's an attachment and a connection to a specific kind of, you know, group and community of people. So it's a very community-based band, and it's also about acceptance of change, you know? That's what I think.
You have to know this. You guys have some rabid fans.
Here and there, you know.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, real appreciative fans. And it's one of our favorite things to talk about with our singer-songwriters and all of our musical guests. You know, you've played for LGBT audiences. You've played for straight audiences. Do you have a preference?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, my favorite thing to do is to play to an audience that, one, appreciates what's happening on stage, is listening, and is connecting. And whether they be straight, gay, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I always say to people, there's a very interesting sort of like type of audience member that I have that I'm always very, very confused by. And it's so interesting that my core audience is definitely female and mainly lesbian. And I think that that's very much changing now. But before, it used to be mainly lesbian and also these bizarrely middle-aged men. And I was like, what is this like? You know, it's such a completely different type of audience, but that was like the main people that I'd find in my audience. And I always be, you know, I find that so interesting that both sides of the spectrum can relate to my music. And that to me is a really important thing, because music to me is just about being universal, you know?
If this show Is So Gay can be big in Eastern Tennessee, you certainly can be big with middle-aged men.
Really? Is that one of your core audiences?
I'm telling you, it's a prime market for us. So if we can pull that off, you guys, without question, middle-aged men, you bring them together. I can't even tell you how many middle-aged men have said to me, I was going through such a midlife crisis, but then I listened to the Clicks and they really helped me through it.
Amazing.
It's good times. Well, as you said before, you know, and as I said in the intro, and it's just so, and obviously we're going to talk all about this. It's so interesting to say, oh, you know, you are the first out male transgender to be signed to a major record label. And from reading about you and from what I know and what I've watched online and all the research I've done, you certainly went through this process. And I'm not just talking about a physical process, but a real journey to get to the point where you have taken on that label.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I first, you know, sort of like hit the scene, so to speak, and this happened, and somebody said that to me, they're like, do you realize that you're the first out trans man that has been signed to a major record deal? I was like, oh, well, wow. I was like, I didn't realize that. And they're like, well, it's, you know, pretty historic. And I'm like, and I started feeling really weird about it.
Yeah.
There was this sort of like pressure around it that made me feel really strange. And it didn't really change that much as I progressed and, you know, started basically transitioning in, you know, in public. And there was some good sides to it, but at the beginning, it felt like a lot of pressure, and I felt like I was being watched sort of by the, you know, LGBTQ police, as in the, you know, PC police.
Yeah.
And when you're growing up, if you're growing up in front of people watching you, everybody makes mistakes or, you know, doesn't, you know, do things the way they're supposed to in the eyes of everyone, but that's part of growing up. And I think that that was probably for me a huge lesson in sort of getting to know yourself and how to grow with yourself while being watched. And I've learned to sort of like grow a thicker skin around what people say to me, but at the same time, remember that I just have to be myself and allow myself to be vulnerable at the same time and not allow for sort of like that sort of scrutiny to be taken too seriously, because the internet is a very interesting thing. And
yeah.
People, they just say things like off the cuff, just like I say things without thinking sometimes that, you know, there's 5,000 people on Facebook watching me say it. You know?
Right.
So, right.
Yeah, and the criticism, and we've said this before, and this is just for us, and you feel free to disagree. The criticism from the LGBT community sometimes feels a little bit sharper than it does,
oh, it does.
From the straight community.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think, you know, it's a very strange thing, you know, the infighting that happens amongst marginalized groups of people.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's not an individual thing to the LGBT community. I think it's, you know, like I said, to many marginalized groups. And I think what ends up happening is, especially with, you know, lesbians and gays and transgender now, that we're being watched. And everybody has a specific idea about how we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to explain who we are.
Right.
And nobody forgets that we're all different people, and
right.
We all have different stories and we have different narratives, and not all of us come from the same place. It doesn't mean that there was one right way of being. And I think that's where, you know, the LGBT community sort of fails, is wanting everybody to accept us for who we are, but then internally not accepting each other for who we are.
Right.
And I think a lot more room needs to be made around that sort of piece. And I have felt that myself, you know. I said out loud one time that I'd been a woman, which I have been. And, you know, I was told that I couldn't say that because that would, you know, demean my trans identity. And I was like, wait a second, you know. But then I realized that Cynthia Nixon went through the same sort of thing when she says that, you know, she chose to be gay.
Right.
And the gay community lost their minds.
Oh, like, boy.
Yeah, you know. I was like, what's wrong with saying you chose to be gay? I'm like, is it wrong when you chose to, like, if you chose to be gay, does that make being gay wrong? And I'm like, no, it doesn't. So it's very weird stuff like that. It's kind
yeah.
of over the-
And I would imagine, as not to put more pressure on you, but as such an individual standard bearer and to hold this status that really nobody else has of being out male trans and being signed to a major record label, that pressure to, I swear I'm not trying to put more on you, but I was doing this radio interview and then I had a breakdown. But yeah, you know, the pressure to be represent more than you is just there.
Absolutely. And it's something that I have to sort of watch myself on because, you know, once in a blue moon, I'll get really upset when somebody says something about me. And I have to remember that that comes from their own personal space. And right. I cannot at all take that on, because if I do, I will fail everybody, because there is no transgender 101.
We're right.
All different people. And I cannot represent a huge group of people by myself. I can only go out there and say, I happen to be transgender. And, you know, if I create some kind of visibility and normalcy, you know, around that issue, then great. And I'm happy to do it. And I will do my best to always, you know, sort of be visible in that way. But I can't in
yeah.
any way.
You can't. You can't. Oh, you are who you are, and that's who you represent, and,
exactly.
and we strive. Yeah. Now, we've been talking for so many years on this show just about voice and the power of voice. And I love the fact that with you, we can actually talk about that there was a physical aspect to the changing and development of your voice.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, I started testosterone about 3.5 years ago. It's been, I can't believe it's been that long, but it was the scariest thing I think I've ever done in my life, because I very much ran the risk of losing my voice. So I was told by so many trans men, and then I lived as a trans man, but appearing to most as a woman,
mm-hmm.
For about 5 years of my transition. And when I found out that it could be done, I was like, oh my God, I need to do this. So I went and did some research, found some people who had done it, and I found out how to do it without losing my voice, because it was actually not so much of a myth, but it was more of how do you do this? And there is a science to it, very much so,
yeah.
Which is that you have to go extremely slow. But I basically was not only physically, but vocally, kind of like a teenage boy, you know, and my voice started cracking, and I had to relearn where to place everything, and I had to start thinking more while I was singing and finding different places in my body to bring my voice out. So it was very, very strange, but it was kind of an amazing journey, and so far so good. I truly believe that I sing much better now than I ever did before, and I think it's because I'm really confident about what's coming out of my body.
Right.
When I hear my voice from before, it feels really timid and almost scared to come out, you know? So, yeah.
And there's just such an not, this is where I tread dangerous ground, not that it wasn't before, but the aspect of authenticity to it now, you can just hear it. You know,
yeah.
That it resonates in such a different way that feels so true.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
You know? And I love that you said that. You know, I went through a period where a lot of my female fans, I think they felt really let down by the idea that I transitioned. But I think it was the first time that they fully, truly, very much like, you know, hetero people had to, like mainly lesbian fans, had to really come to terms with the fact that I was not a woman.
Right.
I was like, I'm not just saying this, guys. Like, this is who I am. And it was amazing for me to see that in a community that, you know, has been very open to receiving trans people and very open around the idea of transitioning, that even in those spaces that they still somewhat had this thing in the back of their head that was like, oh, you know, that's Lucas, but he's one of us.
Right.
And I didn't, it was so interesting because it was a piece that I thought, you know, I'm going to alienate some of my fans because of this. And I had to think about that in part of my transition and like in connection with my career. So it was a very, very strange thing for me to have to go through. But a lot of them have come around.
I'm floored by that. You know, we cover trans issues just constantly on the show and certainly try to highlight media coverage, although it's sorely lacking, as we all know, and folks who listen to the show know. But to be going through your own journey, but then also have to have that eye towards, I actually have to translate this journey to my fans.
It's
a really unique experience.
Totally.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's like you said, it becomes sharp. There's some sharpness in to that, you know, to when people make comments, to when, you know, people say to me, oh, I liked your voice better before. And they don't realize that has not, it's not just about a preference of sound, but it makes you really sort of take it to a place where you're like, can't believe these people are totally questioning my journey, or they're not supporting me in my journey, and you get hurt. And it's really hard to admit that sometimes.
Yeah.
Something like a YouTube comment from somebody saying, I liked your voice before, hurts more than somebody saying something transphobic to me, because I expect it
right.
from you know, stupid people. But when it comes from a community that you've had as an ally for a really long time, it can sometimes, like you said, it can hurt more.
Yeah.
So it's weird. Yeah.
Speaking of YouTube, some very interesting song covers there from you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love doing covers. They're so fun.
They're so fun. That's a different way of doing poker face.
Totally. But that's what, you know, to me, that's, I always say to people, the marker of a really, really good song is when you can take it in any style, in any shape or form, and it still sounds good.
Yeah, totally.
You know? And yeah, that's a great tune.
And you know who else is very supportive of everything that you and I do, although I think that you've had more direct contact? How about that Cyndi Lauper?
How about that Cyndi Lauper?
Oh my
gosh. She's great. I love that chick. Yeah, she's awesome. She has been unbelievably supportive. And, you know, right from the beginning, we got our first major tour on the True Colors tour. We did it 2 years in a row. We were supposed to do, I think it was 4 or 5 dates on the first tour, and she saw us play our first show. I remember it was in Salt Lake City, and came backstage and just went, I want you guys on for the full tour. I was like, all right. Sounds great to me.
Indigo Girls, move over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love the Indigo Girls. Oh, my goodness. I love them.
Yeah, I think I actually threw up a little on the soundboard when they were on. It was a little overwhelming for me.
I actually sang a song with them. It was probably one of the most amazing moments, I think, of my, you know, performance career, if you can believe this. But I there's a amphitheater here in Toronto, and they asked me one night, we were doing the True Colors tour, and they asked me to sing a song with them. And I was like, what song? And they said, Kid Fears. Would you be able to do Michael Stipe's part? And I was like, are you kidding me? So I was like, you know, pooping my drawers, and I did the rehearsal with them backstage, and I was super safe. And then I got on stage, and I just like let it out. And I have to tell you, it was probably one of the most amazing, you know, feeling performances and emotionally rewarding performances I've ever done.
Oh my gosh! Now, when Amy Ray was on the show, I asked Amy what she thought about my performance in the senior high school talent show of Love Will Come to You, but she hadn't seen it. That was disappointing to me. I had thought it made the rounds in 1995. I thought it was big. Turns out she totally didn't even hear it. So
I'd like to hear it.
Yes, well, that's not going to work out well, because you got to sing Kid Fears with them. Though we do have to talk about your song selections for this week's show. And this is, gosh, we've gotten away from this on the show, and we know listeners, we get your angry emails that we have to bring this segment back. So we are bringing this segment back with Lucas. Lucas, this is the part of the show where you tell our listening audience what some of your song selections say about Lucas. It's a little self-analysis based on your song selections.
Well,
here we go. You ready? Well, I'll lead you through it. So okay. We start with, of course, a Click song. What does the Click's Savannah say about Lucas?
Well, it says that I like to stir the pot a little bit.
Nice.
Somebody doesn't treat me properly, and show them what they missed out on.
Love it. Love it. And then we move into your other songs, and it turns out, let me just ruin the ending for people. It turns out that based on your other song selections, I do believe that you are a tween. Is that possible? Is it true? Well, and let's lead it through. Song number 2 that we will be playing later on in the show, Bruno Mars's Locked Out of Heaven. What does Locked Out of Heaven say about Lucas?
It says, I hear... You know, I love pop music, and I'm not a tween. I'm just a pop music whore.
Nice.
I grew up listening to pop music, and that's basically what that says. And the first time I heard that song, all I could hear was The Police, you know?
Yeah.
And, if you listen to it, and so for me, it's about going back. It's about retro.
Love it. Love it. And I'm going to make you do one more. Rihanna's Stay. What does Stay say about Lucas?
Stay is one of the most beautifully executed, simple songs I've ever heard, and simplicity to me as a songwriter is one of the most beautiful things in the world. And I actually believe that that song is probably one of the most beautifully crafted pop songs of this year, I would have to say.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Now, are you, is it mandated there in the country to the north that you like Carly Rae Jepsen?
Hell no.
What?
I don't know, man. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. You know, I'm not trying to like ruin everything.
She's your national hero.
Yeah, well, that to me in itself is, if I hear that maybe song one more time, I might have to kill a human being. It was like, maybe it could, the song was somewhat redeemed for me when Jimmy Fallon performed it with her.
And oh, that was good.
Which was pretty amazing. But other than that, I swear, if that's, I'd rather everybody know us for Anne Murray.
Oh, that's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah. And Alanis, you can't forget Alanis.
Of course, Alanis.
And Dave Coulier. So you guys are all set. You got,
Dave Coulier.
You have your exports. You're just fine. You're just fine.
Oh,
I didn't even know there was a Canadian Idol until.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know.
It's not on the air anymore. But because, you know, that's how big our country is.
Because Carly Rae broke the mold. Although I think she came in like third or something.
Yeah, that's right. I do believe she won a part of it. Actually, my ex-manager used to be one of the judges on there.
Look
so that's
at
how
that.
I first heard about it. Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Now, as we said at the start, very exciting times coming up. We got Black Tie Elevator dropping in just a few weeks. How excited are you?
I am pretty excited. This is, you know, the first record I've released where I feel it's 100% me, and I'm 100% happy. I've never, ever gone back and listened to my own record. And, like, after maybe the first few weeks, I'm, like, done with it. And I've been listening to this one, and just, I actually love my own record, so
nice.
Pretty proud of it.
So when people listen to the whole record, and they're done listening, and they lift the needle, I guess I'm going retro, whatever, just go with it, and they lift the needle, what is it that you hope that they say to themselves, or out loud to a friend?
You really gotta listen to this. I think it's, you know, an album of that shows a great maturity in me. I even listen to it and I'm like, man, I grew up.
Nice.
You know, I think it's mature. I think it's really, you know, deep and articulate. I just think it's a collection of really good songs that are just based on being good outside of genre, you know?
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Now, where can folks go to learn all about the cool things that you guys are doing?
Well, you can go to our website, theclicks.com, and that's spelled C-L-I-K-S. And, you know, Twitter, Facebook, everything is facebook.com/theclicks and Twitter/theclicks and where else? I was going to say MySpace, but that's all gone.
I heard you guys are really big on Friendster.
Oh, my God, I almost forgot about Friendster.
I don't understand how you could.
Oh my God.
And you're touring coming up, and I will say I have already X'd off on my calendar to be on May 2nd at the Iron Horse in our beloved Northampton right outside my door.
Right on. Yeah, I love Northampton. What a great little place.
Oh, it's great.
I never even knew of it. Oh yeah, somebody told me, they're like, you never heard of Northampton? Smith College? And I was like, no. And they're like, it's like the land of lesbians over there. I was like, really?
It's a magical place.
And I remember when we drove in, all we saw was Subarus everywhere. And we were like, hey, isn't that the gay car?
It's like, excuse me, that's our Vermont state car. other states have state birds. We have the Subaru. But it's great. It's one of my favorite places. I every time Girly Man and Susan Werner, our beloved Susan Werner, every time they're at the Iron Horse, we love the Iron Horse. It's such a fun place to see and act because you're just right there and you're just so accessible. So excited to see the Clicks at the Iron Horse on May 2nd. So that's coming up.
Yeah, man.
All right. Exciting times for you, my friend.
Yeah, great interview. You're great at interviewing people.
Thank you very much.
I was not bored for a second.
That's a good thing. It's a good thing. Well, folks, we will link up to the Clicks website. Please go and check out that album in just a few weeks, Black Tie Elevator. Lucas, what an absolute treat. Please keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. You too.
Everything's so loud. Lost in Silence rings to tell me I've been sinking. Man, I'm sinking. Yeah, the things so loud when you can't touch the ground. By the board, I'm proud that you can't.
Folks, and we are back. Well, I have a ton of LGBT news to throw out at you this week, with maybe some of my own views on that LGBT news thrown into the mix. I am flying solo this week. Jody will be back with us next week to talk about the news, because I'm broadcasting this week. I'm recording from Montvale, New Jersey, not from Brattleboro, Vermont, where we always record from and have for 4+ years. But I am in New Jersey. I am celebrating and commemorating and grieving the passing of Alice Besson, who passed away just a few days ago at the incredible age of 94, born in 1918. We actually talked about Alice Besson on our October 19th, 2011 episode when we had my mom, Terry Schneck, on the show. Alice Besson was my mother's mother, so Alice Besson, my grandmother, and she passed away the other day. And I bring this up just to celebrate this incredible woman, because if you listen to that episode, and you can go to the guests link on the guest tab on thisshowisogay.com, and you can scroll down and find my mother, Terry Schneck, and you can click on that episode and listen to a story that I had not heard before. My mother told it on the air on This Show Is So Gay about when I came out of the closet, and my mother was really struggling with that because she didn't have a frame of reference and she didn't know what it meant for me, and she was worried about me, and it wasn't the future that she had put together in her head. And she called her mother, Alice Besson. And you would think calling my grandmother, Alice Besson, who was from a completely different generation, that she would commiserate with my mother and say, yes, no, this is terrible, and what should we do, what should we do? But as my mother told in that episode, and you should hear my mom tell the story because she can tell it so much better than I could. I didn't even know the story until my mom told it. But she called my grandmother, Alice Besson, and my grandmother said, what are you going to do? He is who he is. We love him. We're always going to love him. And that's that. And my mother even recounted to me in the past couple days, as we were talking about my grandmother and celebrating her incredible 94 years, how that changed, you know, my mom's views on who I was meant to be, who I will continue to be, which is always her son and my mother's unquestioning love for me. So a huge shout out to Alice Besson, without whom there would be no This Show Is So Gay, because I would not have found the acceptance that I found with my parents. So Alice Besson, 94 years old, 1918. And you can actually go to the This Show Is So Gay Facebook page and you could read my eulogy, because one of the most incredible memories that I have of my grandmother Alice was when she went with me years ago. I mean, she was in her late 80s. And she went with me to go see Trembling Before God at the YMHA in Washington Township, New Jersey. And if you've not seen Trembling Before God, it's a documentary about the intersection of Orthodox Judaism and LGBT identity. And most of the folks that they depict in that movie, in that documentary, have to be blacked out or had their voices altered just because, you know, there's so much conflict there. And my grandmother went with me in her late 80s to go see that movie because she wanted to learn more about that intersection between Orthodox Judaism and sexual orientation. And, you know, there's a whole host of folks who were much, much younger who would not even think about taking the time to enrich their lives in that way and to learn more and to have a different perspective. But Alice Besson, 94 years old, she had it and will be greatly, greatly missed. So shout out to her. But we must get to the news. A lot of political stories to start us off and some other routes that we will take. But let's start off with politics. We do love our politics. We turn to Montana, the treasure state. I know that because I wrote my sixth grade project on Montana, and all I remember is that Montana is the treasure state. Up in Montana, an openly gay state representative is pushing a bill to decriminalize gay sex in the state because apparently, right now, it's codified that gay sex is still criminal activity. The Billings Gazette reports that Representative Bryce Bennett, he made the motion this past Monday to take Senate Bill 107 out of the House Judiciary Committee and place it on the agenda for a House vote. Bennett, who is openly gay, said the law emphasizes inequality and pointed to the 1997 Montana Supreme Court case that ruled the language criminalizing gay sex was unconstitutional. He said, quote, "Under this law, I am considered a felon. I am not your equal." Although this law was invalidated by a U.S. Supreme Court ruling, the law is technically still on the books. This is one of those things, folks, you should really make sure that even though it's amazing, you would think, okay, if something's unconstitutional, there's no way it's written into law. There are still any number of laws that are still on the books in some of these states. I don't know what I mean, these states, but, you know, some states that perhaps don't do regular reviews of their laws as every state should. There in Montana, they still, even though it's unconstitutional, have a law that says it's illegal to have sex if you're gay. So, kudos to you, Representative Bryce Bennett, and he will, I'm sure, get that passed through, and we support him. In other news, a House Republican, you ready? This could be our quote of the week, A House Republican, he expressed that the Affordable Care Act should not cover procedures like gender transition surgery because he, quote, likes being a boy. This is Representative Paul Brown, Brune, B-R-O-U-N, so pronounce it as you will. Representative Paul of Georgia, he said at a town hall meeting, quote, "I don't want to pay for a sex change operation. I'm not interested. I like being a boy." This representative is a medical doctor, and he was referring to a proposal by the Obama administration to provide gender transition therapy to trans people as prescribed by a doctor. The Affordable Care Act currently does not cover transition surgery, and he's saying it shouldn't because he doesn't want to be a boy. This is a medical doctor who is, how do you even provide commentary on this one? That they can boil it down. This is how some politicians can boil down how legislation should work. So, Representative Paul Brown, he says that gender transition surgery should not be covered because he himself, this representative, he likes being a boy. That is what he said. So, that's sometimes how legislation happens, folks, because this is how some of our representatives understand bills to be. So, yeah. In New Mexico governor, oh, by the way, it just gets worse and worse from here on out for our politics story. So, you know, brace yourself. New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez, she has vetoed a bill that would have helped same-sex domestic partners of military personnel obtain professional licenses in New Mexico. She later, this is a pair of stories. So first, let's cover again. She vetoed a bill that would have helped same-sex domestic partners of military personnel obtain professional licenses in New Mexico. She then later signed an identical bill that only protected heterosexual military couples. The bill was drafted to expedite the process for military families or recent veterans who relocate to New Mexico so that spouses or partners who need to become licensed in order to work, such as teachers or counselors, can quickly begin work. Agencies will have to issue a license to professionals related to military personnel as soon as possible if the applicant is already licensed in another state. Okay? So she said, regarding that second bill, the one that she signed for heterosexual people, "I'm pleased that we are now removing this red tape and making it easier for our troops, veterans, and military spouses to get work right away." That's about the one that applies only to heterosexual military couples. Yeah. Pat Davis of Progress Now, New Mexico, decried the move to the Post, saying and said that the Republican governor's message basically stated, quote, if you're gay, we're not going to help you. He added that this is especially harmful since New Mexico has a high population of service members and veterans. He continued to say, Pat Davis of Progress Now, New Mexico, he said, quote, the rest of the country has moved forward and understands the sacrifice our proud gay service members make. There is no excuse in today's age for signing a bill that intentionally thumbs one's nose at our gay soldiers unless you believe that their service and sacrifice is somehow less important. Which I think is pretty clear that the New Mexico governor, Susana Martinez, kind of feels that, you know, the sacrifices and contributions of our gay military personnel is somehow less important. I mean, really, didn't sign it for the gays, vetoed it for the gays. Vetoed it, and then signed it for heterosexual military couples. Okay, so there's that. And then the overarching one, Rick Santorum, who I guess just doesn't want to go away. Rick Santorum, as conservatives continue to grapple with how they and the Republican Party at large should handle the issue of gay marriage, Rick Santorum has expressed an opinion. He said, quote, I'm sure you could go back and read stories. Oh, you know, the Republican Party's going to change. This is the future. Obviously, that didn't happen. I think you're going to see the same stories written now, and it's not going to happen. The Republican Party's not going to change on this issue, the issue being gay marriage. In my opinion, here's the quote. In my opinion, this is from Rick Santorum, in my opinion, it would be suicidal if it did. So Rick Santorum is saying that if the Republican Party, in his opinion, caves on gay marriage or, you know, evolves or recognizes that they all have gay members of their family or friends group or something, that if they were to somehow move towards gay marriage, it would be suicidal for the Republican Party. Okay. On the Democratic side, because Rick Santorum very much not on the Democratic side, we should highlight that I think they're up to 53 members of the Senate. Are now saying that they support gay marriage. There are still three Democrats who do not. There are still three Democrats who do not. Arkansas's Mark Pryor, Louisiana's Mary Landrieu, and West Virginia's Joe Manchin are left as the only Democratic senators against same-sex marriage. So we will see if they, too, evolve. Can we go international? Let's go international for a second. In Uruguay, when was the last time we covered Uruguay on this show, So Gay? We need to cover our international stories. Uruguay's lawmakers are debating this week whether they should legalize gay marriage. Their vote would make Uruguay the third country in the Americas after Canada and Argentina to eliminate laws making marriage, adoption, and other family rights exclusive to heterosexuals. In all, 11 other nations around the world have already taken this step. The Marriage Equality Project was already approved by ample majorities in both houses, but senators made some changes requiring a final vote by the deputies. Among them, gay and lesbian foreigners will now be allowed to come to Uruguay to marry, just as heterosexual couples can. That's pretty exciting in Uruguay. We love that. Whereas some other countries have carved out new territory for gay and lesbian couples without affecting heterosexual married couples, Uruguay is creating a single set of rules for all people, gay or straight. Instead of the words husband and wife in marriage contracts, it refers to the gender-neutral, quote, contracting parties. Shout out Uruguay. Making some real progress there. That's pretty darn exciting. Now, a couple of stories about businesses that are saying, we will not help you out because, you know, you're gay. So let's cover these. First, we had the story that we talked about a while back, actually not that long, it was about a month ago, about in Washington, do you remember this, when there was the florist who thought about it and really tried, but ultimately told her longtime patron, I'm sorry, I cannot provide flowers for your wedding because Jesus said that I can't do that. Jesus apparently said at some point there in the Bible, do not provide floral arrangements to the gay couples. But now that florist is being sued, the Washington State Attorney General has filed the lawsuit against this Eastern Washington florist. According to the Times, Attorney General Bob Ferguson filed the lawsuit in Benton County Superior Court this past Tuesday against Baronelle Stutzman, who owns Arlene's Flowers and Gifts in Richland, Washington, after Baronelle Stutzman refused to serve a longtime gay customer. And this is what Ferguson, Attorney General Ferguson, said in the statement, quote, under the Consumer Protection Act, it is unlawful to discriminate against customers on the basis of sexual orientation. If a business provides a product or service to opposite-sex couples for their weddings, then it must provide same-sex couples the same product or service. The lawsuit contends that Stutzman violated the state's anti-discrimination laws when the shop owner refused to provide the flowers for Robert Ingersoll's wedding to his husband. The state is seeking $2,000 in penalties and a permanent injunction requiring the florist to comply with a state law that recognizes marriage equality. So that is happening in Washington. Now, here's another one. There's another one. Now, this is over in California. A California-based graphic artist and Etsy shop owner refused to create a guest book cover for two lesbian brides, but only after exchanging several emails and praying about it with her pastor. This is amazing. Okay. So this was reported by Queerty, and these were the email exchanges with Jessica Fong, who is the owner for the now defunct Pale Design store on indie crafting site Etsy.com. And this was reported by Jamie Howard, who was conversing back and forth with Jessica Fong about designing this guestbook cover for the lesbian brides. And so this is what Jessica Fong wrote to Jamie. You ready? Quote, hi, Jamie. Sorry for the late reply, exclamation point. After talking with my pastor and praying about the situation, I decided that I shouldn't design your guestbook for you. Please know that I did take this into much thought, though. Because I am Christian and I believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman, I feel that designing a customized guestbook for you two will be against my belief and will mean that who I am and my business supports gay marriages. I hope that you understand. Sorry for staying in contact with you for so long and not giving you a concrete response until now. So there is still, apparently, even though the Etsy page is down, there's still a Facebook page for this Jessica Fong for Pale Designs, and people are writing like, hey, you should maybe be equal opportunity. So that's going on in California, and those are two businesses. So be warned, businesses, if you're somehow listening to this show, So Gay, maybe streaming us in your store, and you're thinking, I do not want to provide services to my gay patrons, that might not work out for you, because you will either be flamed on Facebook or, you know, the Attorney General of Washington will file suit against you. Maybe that's just going to happen no matter where you are. If you're in Illinois and you refuse to provide services to your gay patrons, it might be that the state attorney general in Washington might file suit against you. We don't know. We don't know the laws. Okay, it's probably not going to happen. But, you know, you should provide equal services. And more likely, if you're listening to the show and you are not being provided equal services, then you should, of course, say something, because there are folks who can support you, because it's against most laws in most states. So do something. Do something. Hey, we get to come back to the wonderful world of comic books. I love talking about comic books. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. I grew up reading comic books. X-Men, escapism, kind of got me through childhood. DC Comics, home to queer-friendly characters like the out lesbian Batwoman and openly gay Green Lantern, they just introduced a character who may be the first out trans woman to have a recurrent role in mainstream comics. She also happens to be bisexual. In Batgirl number 19, the titular heroine's roommate, so Batgirl being the titular heroine, her roommate, Alicia Yao, comes out to her superhero roommate as trans with a simple statement. Batgirl writer Gail Simone told Wired she wanted her characters to reflect the diversity she sees among comic book fans, not yet reflected in characters who are overwhelmingly male, white, and cisgender, non-trans. Diversity, says Simone, quote, is the issue for superhero comics. Look, this is continuing with the quote, look, we have a problem most media don't have, which is that almost all of the tent poles we build our industry upon were created over a half century ago at a time where the characters were almost without exception white, cisgendered, straight, and on and on. It's fine. It's great that people love these characters, but if we only build around them, then we look like an episode of the Andy Griffith Show for all eternity, end quote. Simone told Wired including a trans character was a relative non-issue for her publishers and doesn't anticipate much backlash from readers, so she promises that Alicia won't be a token caricature. Alicia, quote, will be a character, not a public service announcement. I love that quote. I love that quote. Simone goes on to say, quote, being trans isn't just part of her story. If someone loved her before and doesn't love her after, well, that's a shame. But we can't let that kind of thinking keep comics in the 1950s forever. It's incredible. And also, it's kind of incredible that it's going on at DC Comics, because DC Comics is all over the place right now. You have Batwoman, out lesbian, great, openly gay Green Lantern, the reinvention of the Green Lantern. But then you also have this, still, you have this Orson Scott Card debacle, where crazy anti-gay Orson Scott Card is still writing and doing some work for Superman, the iconic Superman, on an online comic. So they're struggling over there at DC, but they're certainly trying. So first out trans character there. Pretty darn exciting. Pretty darn exciting. One other story that we wanted to get to, we talked really briefly, I mean really briefly last week, because Jody and I were telling coming out stories, so we didn't really have a ton of time, but Matt Salmon, Congressman Matt Salmon, who, gosh, you know, I really struggle with the story, and I'm not even sure, actually, I would have to go back and listen if Jody and I had time for it, or that hit the cutting room floor, because we were a little bit over last week, but Congressman Matt Salmon had said, you know, he's a Republican from Arizona, and he had said that he still opposes same-sex marriage, even though his son is gay, which, I don't know, you got to go with the theory that it's so much more difficult, I would imagine, therefore Representative Matt Salmon or any person, to oppose gay marriage when your son or daughter or anyone close in your life is gay. I mean, you have to see that when that close person in your life comes out and you know that they're gay, for you to persist in saying, I want to deny them the same rights that I have is crazy. I mean, it's pretty nutty. It's pretty nutty that you would be able to persist in doing that. But Representative Matt Salmon, he said, yeah, no, I'm still against marriage equality. Well, now his son, who is also named Matt Salmon, Matt R. Salmon, he's 24 years old, he gave an extended interview, and you should totally check this out. It's over on HuffingtonPost.com. Matt Salmon Jr., he said that his father, quote, doesn't support gay marriage, but that doesn't make him anti-gay at all. My father and I have a great relationship. He's one of my close friends. His son, Matt Salmon Jr., he's a third-year medical student. He reveals that he attended therapy while an undergrad at Arizona State University. His decision to end therapy created a rift in his relationship with his conservative father. He said, quote, we still had a loving relationship, but it was difficult for him to accept, and so it was a rough patch. He also says that he and his father have the best relationship we've ever had, though he confesses he wishes he had the same support that Senator Rob Portman of Ohio, who I'm sure you all heard, he supports same-sex marriage now, because he also has a gay son. And so Matt Salmon Jr. says, it took me 20 years before I was okay with myself. I can't expect anybody else to do it overnight or to change their minds in any sooner amount of time, end quote. So again, it's a whole interview, and you can read and read and read. And I guess just because, as I said before, I'm kind of in this frame of mind of thinking about my own family and where they are with acceptance. And when I read someone say, I can't expect anybody else to do it overnight or change their minds in any sooner amount of time. Yeah. And he's talking about, by the way, 20 years. He said it took me 20 years. I think that you can expect that. And what would happen if we demanded that? What would happen if we said, you know what, I do kind of expect that my parents take less time. I mean, they see that I struggle with it. They see that, and I'm not talking about me, I'm just saying in general, although I did struggle with it. But what would happen if we said we kind of expect our parents to recognize our struggle and take less than 20 years? And if my dad is a congressman, which he's not, but if my dad's a congressman, I kind of expect that him wanting equality for me factors into his decisions, and it will change his views. And if he's at conflict for it, now I'm taking this as far as I can go, if he is at conflict with that and he can't reconcile that, then maybe he shouldn't be a representative anymore. So I don't know. You kind of link some of these stories together. You have the representative that we covered before who's saying that the Affordable Care Act shouldn't cover trans folks because he, the representative, doesn't want to change his gender. And so the personal factor's in there, but it doesn't apparently factor in for Representative Matt Salmon. So it's just, I don't know, it's all over the map. And where you are as a representative and who you're representing, I know, can just cause so much drama. And it's a personal, because people are voting for you, but you're also trying to represent more than you. I don't know. I'm going to be writing a piece in the next couple days, and we will link to it on our Facebook page for the Huffington Post on the National Day of Silence. I think I'm going a little controversial. I struggle with the National Day of Silence. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about it on next week's show. We have also an incredible show for you all next week, and you can learn all about our upcoming shows on theshowsoke.com. But we have these amazing authors who put together this book on same-sex weddings, and they took these incredible photographs, and they're wedding photographers, and it's really just a beautiful evolution. And so we will be talking about that on next week's show. You can, of course, as I said, go to theshowsoke.com to learn more about all the amazing things coming up on The Show So Gay, because there are some amazing things coming up on The Show So Gay. You can stroll on over to our Facebook page and like us there and join the 4,000 plus folks that like us there. Please follow us on Twitter, please. Am I asking nicely? Please follow us on Twitter, because that would be great to have some more followers there. And I'll figure out how to use it. I recognize I'm not really using it very well, but I will tweet more. I promise you. I promise you. And of course, we want your feedback. Send us an email. You know, if you sent an email before to ken@theshowsogay.com, you know that I responded, because I respond to every single email that goes in to ken@theshowsogay.com. If you have guest suggestions, if you have some feedback, whatever you have, or we do, it's fine for you to write really good things too. We love those. It doesn't have to be because you want to decry something that we did wrong. But you can write, hey, I enjoy the show, because we love hearing from you guys, and we will, of course, respond. So that's it. That's me babbling on this week's episode. I will be back in Vermont with Jody for next week's episode, so stay tuned for that. Get out there, folks. Go do some amazing things. Hey, if you have grandparents who are alive, tell them that you love them, and maybe take them to an amazing movie, because they might be interested. Do not let the assumptions that we have about age cloud your actions, because, you know, they are assumptions, and people say things about assumptions, and I won't say it for you here, but don't make assumptions about folks of a different age than you, because they want to embrace you. It's very possible. So go talk to your grandparents, because they have amazing things to say. Get out there. Go do some incredible things. Raise up the voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're doing it, of course, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
One, two, one, two, three.